Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Mysteries with the History, where I'll take you on the wild ride into the unknown, the strange, and the mysterious. Like you, I have questions, and like you, I want answers. Let me say hi to everyone in the live chat. We got Zero Cool, Ryan, Spaghetti Lee, Christina Bell, what's poppin'? Cosmic Jerry, how is everyone doing today? Last week's episode of Bob Lazar's Claims was truly eye-opening for me. I had no idea the argument was so passionately polarized. Okay. Again, I like to remind viewers today that I'm completely on the fence with the story, but the ramifications of his claims are so astonishing, if true, that any corroboration should give cause for people to sit up and pay close attention. It's also a mystery with a history that young people like myself should be familiar with when coming into the UFO topic. We have a lot to go through today, and Richard will be with us only for a limited time, so I will be disabling Super Chat questions until the first segment of the show is over, and then I will enable them again. Okay, with all of that out of the way, let me bring on my special guests. First, my co-host, Jimmy Church of the Fade to Black radio show, and welcoming for the first time someone who is a pillar of the UFO community and a bastion of truth-seeking and fact-finding, author and researcher, Mr. Richard Doland. How are you guys doing today?
Hi, Christina. Thanks for having me on here, and greetings to my friend Jimmy.
Jimmy?
I'm just messing with her. I had to do that. Richard, it's great to see you, my friend. And I want to thank your agent and the negotiations.
So, Richard, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're only going to be, I know you have your own show to prep for today, so you'll only be with us for about 30 minutes of Mysteries with the History. So let's just get right into it. So today I'd like for us... So today I would like for us to cover more the actual claims themselves and what since the time those claims were made has been verified or confirmed. But before we go there, Jimmy, last week you said that for 30 years you were an ardent Bob Lazar believer, but that something changed your perspective. Can you give us just a very brief reminder of what it was that turned you more skeptical of his claims?
Yes, and thank you for that. And what is crazy about this is Richard and I have had this exact discussion so many times before. And just recently, Richard and I were together out here in Los Angeles. And we were together twice. We were together in Laughlin, and we were together here in Los Angeles. And both times, Richard spun around to me and said, okay, Church, let's talk Lazar and give me your best. And I said, okay, let's go. And so Richard and I are very aware of how the community looks at Bob Lazar on both sides. And the two of us have tried our best to talk through this. And it's not an easy thing to do. And one of the things that I said to Richard recently, I said, look, you know, I was 30 years, you know, 30 years. I was firmly behind Bob, but things have changed. And Richard said, well, what was it? Right. Give that to me. And Richard, did we not have this exact conversation just recently?
We did. And look, if we go more than 30 minutes, I'll go more. We'll see how this goes. But yes, you and I did. And I'm still not really 100% certain of why you have a different opinion. But I'll just say this. I have a couple of funny things to say about this. So when I first broke into the UFO field over 20 years ago, one of the first public events I did was in St. Louis. And it was for a tiny little group of like maybe 10 people attended. I'm not kidding you. But one of the other presenters, other than me, I was brand new, was Stanton Friedman. So it was myself, Stanton, Carol Rosen was there, a few other folks, and there was no one in attendance. This was right after 9/11. It was crazy. But one of the things that Stan, I remember in the airport on the way back, Stan sat me down. Like we had never talked before. And he's like sizing me up. And his first question, we're sitting across from this tiny little airport table. And he wanted to know what I thought of Bob Lazar. And back in 2001, I have to honestly say, I didn't know a lot about Bob Lazar. Like I had taken me everything I could just to write a history of the early years. I knew basically nothing from 1973 onward. So I didn't really know what I thought about Lazar, but I was a little, I have to say, and I loved Stan, but I was a little put off by the fact that he was trying to browbeat me that early into having a skeptical opinion on Lazar. But over the years, when I wrote my second volume of UFOs in the National Security State, Lazar was one of the things that I was just terrified of writing about because there's so many landmines in the field. And with Lazar, even then, it was totally polarized. You know, it's always been. But I form my opinion. I recall about a year before that book came out, I ran into John Alexander. Some people know who he is at an event. And Alexander takes me aside. And he says, I want you to know, Lazar, what do you say? Like, totally full of shit, like from A to Z. I'm like, okay, fine. I didn't really think a whole lot of John Alexander, so that didn't mean a lot. 30 minutes later, I run into Ron Regehr, who was at some point state director of MUFON in Utah. And Ron is a very, very fine researcher. So Ron says, yeah, I just want you to know, I knew Bob Lazar back in the day, and I've gone back with him for years, and he is 100% legit. So I get these two exactly opposite assessments within a half hour of each other. But my take on Lazar, I'll just put this out there. I mean, There are always problems with all the kinds of things Lazar has said. His education, which Stan brought up, you know, over and over again. MIT, Caltech, there's no evidence he took any courses there. It's possibly audited courses, you know. And I'll just say this one thing about people who lie about their education. Today, that's like an impossibility. But I will just say back in the 80s and 90s, may not be a good thing, but people lied about their education all the time. And that's fact. They did it all the time. And I know this because I used to write professional resumes for people. And I knew some of those people were just making things up on their education. They did it because they could get away with it. That doesn't say that. I'm not saying that's what Lazar did explicitly, but he might have done it. I don't know. Or fudged it or whatever. But I actually do believe the fundamentals of Lazar's story. I've never really had major doubts about it. I think he's always fundamentally told the truth.
But let me jump in.
And I can give my reasons as we talk.
Exactly. Let me jump in there, Richard, and ask you, what is the standard of fundamentals for you? When you say the fundamentals of his story, that he visited
I'll do my best.
51? Yeah.
I mean, look, I wasn't there. I can't know. I wasn't there. But Lazar. So let's start with George Knapp, who it would be great if we could get George in here. So many of us have spoken to George about Lazar quite a bit. George did probably more investigation of Lazar than anybody that I know. Spent a lot of time with him. So Knapp could not, I don't think that he confirmed the S4 connection, but he certainly did confirm the Los Alamos National Labs connection from 1982-83. And then what George has said is that, you know, Lazar was the first one to come to him about claims of Area 51 and S4, but certainly not the last. And over many subsequent years, George has interviewed, I think about, he says 25 or so, about two dozen individuals who, in his assessment, have corroborated various aspects of what Lazar originally said to him. So I think that's significant. The other thing that Lazar did, of course, is, you know, here he is in late 19 or early 1989. He's got his position working with EG&G, and he's talking to John Lear and Gene Huff. Gene Huff is his real estate buddy in Las Vegas, and he knows John Lear, who everyone knows about John Lear. And he somehow knows. He says, on Wednesday, you go to this particular spot. We're going to go watch these objects at their test flying. Now, you could, I don't know how Lazar would have known that. Lear didn't know about this. Huff certainly didn't know about this. Lazar figured it out. They go on two occasions. The second occasion, they record video, which is actually, and you could watch it on YouTube. It's not the greatest quality, but it's 1989. And then on the third occasion, they get detained by security. And that's when Lazar lost his job. So something happened there. I mean, Lazar was able to get access to information that certainly seemed to be legit. He was able to get George Knapp original, you know, the original versions of many stories that George was later able to get corroborated. By the way, George's, all of his later witnesses, according to George, were able to provide a little, fair amount of detail, but none were willing ultimately to come forward publicly. They were all afraid. So that's what we have. So that's just to start with Lazar. There's probably more we could talk about.
And you know what? I'll hand this over to Christine. Christine, I don't want to step on your toes. Did you have something else for Richard?
No, Jimmy, go ahead. I know there's something on the tip of your tongue, so go for it.
Yeah. So back to the setup for all of this. When, you know, 30 years I had invested with Bob. And by the way, I went through the same experiences with Stanton Friedman in the very beginning. And it was an uncomfortable position because we all respect Stan. But woof, you know, and
he could come down pretty hard on that. You know, he obviously did.
And he did this in front of a lot of people. You were there, Richard.
For 30 years, he used the word fraud.
Yes.
That was his number one word for Lazar.
But this is what, for me, with all of the, as Richard puts it, landmines about Bob Lazar that are out there that we're all aware of. I think all of us are willing to give him a somewhat of a hall pass on a lot of different things, because the story itself was original, broke it, Area 51, all of these subjects were around Bob, and we all appreciate
the world did not know about Area 51 until Bob Lazar.
That's right. So we're all willing to give him a hall pass on so many things, and I was one of them. But what did it for me at the end of, I'm getting an echo. I think, Richard, mute your mic for a second. Just mute yourself. And let me see. Yeah, it's Richard. Okay.
All right, sorry about that. Let me see if I can fix that.
Yeah, yeah. Is in the Jeremy Corbell movie, and I've talked about this with Richard, there was this scene about a raid at Bob's offices looking for Element 115. And those were the claims that were made in the movie and certainly followed up after that. When it turns out, that's not why they were there. They were there for a murder investigation. And when I read the Detroit Police Department, when I had read the police reports on what they were looking for in this murder investigation and how it was put together, clearly Bob and Jeremy knew this, but they chose to ride this Element 115 raid story and kind of milk that, not only for the documentary, but for the story in itself. And that to me put me in a very uncomfortable position. And I had to back up and just go, if they are willing to.
Has anyone asked Jeremy about this, by the way? I do remember you and I discussed this, and that's a real problem. I mean,
it definitely
seems like deception, but what's the story behind that?
Well, the short version of it, Richard, I went into this at length last week. Bob, there is a collector and a hobby for everything in the world. And there are hobbyists that collect the elements from the periodic table. Okay. You start with here and you try to collect, you know, it's like stamp collecting or coin collecting, right? Okay. So, but there are certain elements on that chart that are difficult to get to. Plutonium, right? How do you collect a sample of plutonium for your collection? And Bob had some periodic table collection thing with anyway, there was a murder that happened in Detroit, and it was poisoning, radiation poisoning. And they were able to identify the element that did the poisoning, and they go to the suspect's house and they find that this element was purchased from Bob from United Nuclear, from one of those like coin collection things, right? A periodic table. So that's what they did. And they went and in this murder investigation, went to United Nuclear, presented him with a search warrant, looking for this receipt that he sold to the murder suspect, this particular element. And that's it. Nothing more than that. They went in. He assisted them with this. They got the receipt. They went back, and the murder trial and conviction and all of that stuff continued. But Bob knew this. He knew what the search warrant was.
Yeah, but here's my question for you. By the way, I got earbuds on, so hopefully there's no more.
Yeah, it's all cool. It's all cool.
Has anyone asked Jeremy or Bob, like, why the shenanigans for the video? I think that would be important. Like, I would want to hear what they have to say about it. I'm not here to absolve Bob on this, but was this Jeremy's doing? Did Bob just grudgingly go along with it? Like, these are important things to keep in mind.
Sure.
And also, I would just emphasize, this is also 30 plus years after the event. And I don't really know how fair it is to judge his original story based on this problem with this recent documentary. I'm not really sure how comfortable I would be doing that.
And for me, everybody's a little bit different. And so, Richard, I appreciate that. And Richard and I have already discussed this through. But for me, I was like, I just have to back up and reanalyze all of this.
Well, I want to ask you guys both a question. And if we take away the points of the contention about his academic credentials, what are we left with? You know, we have his claims, we have John Lear's accounts, George Knapp's research. I want to know about the ensuing years since he made those claims. I mean, what third-party cooperative, even if anecdotal evidence, has come to light about the UFOs in S4 and back engineering of such technologies has come to light? Who has an answer for that?
Yeah, let Richard go first.
I'll go first. It doesn't matter. So you've got Bob's claims. You've got some very, very interesting claims from James Goodall, who's an amazing guy, in my opinion. It's not clear to me if Goodall's claims were – I don't think they were public before Lazar's claims were, although Goodall was investigating a lot of this stuff in the mid-1980s. So there's that. In other words, he was U.S. military and an aviation writer and had a lot of very good contacts within – Area 51. I don't think he designated S4 specifically, but he absolutely knew about deep black programs that were flying saucer related, advanced black triangle craft, I believe. And then the famous quote that he got from someone who said to him, someone with 11 years experience at Groom Lake, "We have things in the Nevada desert that would make George Lucas envious." That came from Goodall, and he was told that in the mid 80s. So there's Goodall. And then I mentioned George Knapp a little while ago. Unfortunately for us, we don't have George's witnesses' names because they do not want to go public. But I mean, for my part, I'm willing to believe George Knapp. He says he's got about 24 people that he has spoken to in great detail that he states have corroborated elements, different things that Lazar has talked about. So that's for starters. There's more Area 51 stories. I mean, I'm trying to think of them off my head, but I would think that's not a bad place to start.
Jimmy?
That was one of the, I think one of the things that all of us have waited for is witness testimony is one thing, and that's great, but and cooperation. But just something that we could put our teeth into, a document, a piece of paper, a photograph, an ID, you know, anything to support this. Because if you have that one little thing,
then sure, we're only dealing with the UFO cover-up and deep black privatized special access programs. What's the problem getting
right? Right. And that's what we've been waiting for. And see, without that, eyewitness testimony and cooperation, that's all great. But Bob has had every opportunity to produce something. There's got to be a piece of paper somewhere in his life where he can go, here, you know, check this out. And that's the thing. Ever since
Here's the thing, though. I mean, Lazar had zero opportunity to do any real work there, honestly, when you think about it. So even by his own account, he's there for, I think, 6 or maybe 7 times. It's not that much. The first 2 times, he states he didn't even get to see a craft. He's reading documents. He's being debriefed. He's reading about Project Galileo, Project Looking Glass. This is pretty heavy-duty, almost sci-fi stuff. You know, Looking Glass, I think, is like a almost like a time travel related program, he said. You know, especially back in 1989 to say this, that's pretty out there, right?
Well, what about the claim that Bob Lazar has a certain amount of the staple element 115 hidden away? Do you feel like him coming, like not coming forward with that amazing evidence to be scrutinized by other scientists puts a nail in his claims?
Totally agree. It's a problem. I was just about to get to that, Christina. Good. I'm glad you mentioned it. You know, he and Lear supposedly had a piece of element 115. They did some kind of experiment with it, I think. And that seems very odd. I mean, look, our ability to replicate element 115 gives us an isotope that has a half-life of like a split second at the most. Like, it's not stable.
Right.
We can create it, but we really, there's no practical version. There's no isotope that we have that works. And it's so impossible. It's jokingly referred to as unobtainium by physicists because you can't get it. So is that even real? You know, one thing I've often wondered is if Lazar was fed a line of BS about the 115. I remember talking years ago with one of the most crazy, smart people, impossible, nice people I've ever known. That's the late Gordon Novell. Some people listening might have known Gordon. He was someone who's, I used to like duck his phone calls on a regular basis because like he would just rope you into things. But Gordon was a man possessed by a mission, and his mission was to replicate the alien reproduction vehicle allegedly seen by Bradford Sorensen back in 1988. And this is relevant to the Lazar story, in my opinion. So in the ARV story, if you take Sorensen's apparent testimony, he's never spoken publicly, but he's talked to people privately. Sorensen goes there, it's November 1988, and he's at a Lockheed big hangar, and he sees this hovering flying saucer, and there's a general at a podium talking about this operating on the vacuum, on principles of the vacuum. So this is 1988, it's the year before the first paper on zero-point energy. Presumably, maybe this general was talking about zero-point energy. We're just guessing.
This was at Norton, so, right?
It was said to be at Norton, but it was actually at the Hellendale facility,
right,
Lockheed.
Right.
Yeah. So they originally, this is through the late Mark McCandlish, and they said Norton, I think, to hide the truth. But here's my point. So you've got this one source stating that it's zero-point energy. Then you've got Lazar stating it's element 115. So what Gordon Novell actually said to me years ago, he said, this is what I think. He said, if you've got a team of people trying to reverse engineer a flying saucer, let's say like where the team trying to do it. And we know that it operates on 0 point, but we know that there's competitors out there who are also trying to do the same thing. And we don't want them to know that. We take a guy like Lazar, who we might psychologically profile to be someone who just maybe doesn't give a crap about things. I mean, Lazar is someone who just says things. Like in my opinion, like when you look at him in 89 or 90, he just did. Now, that maybe there are reasons he was a security leak. He had problems with his wife, so on. But he might have been psych profiled. This is according to the late Gordon Novell. And they feed him a line of bull. And then that gets out. And then the competitors are like, oh, crap, element 115. We're never going to be able to make this. Let's just give it up. So that Lazar could have been actually giving genuine disinfo without knowing it. Now, the one problem with that analysis by Gordon is that Lazar himself claimed with Lear to have had element 115. So what the hell is that all about? And I don't know the answer. I'm not saying Lazar's story is perfect, but to throw it all out, I'm not comfortable doing that. I think that there's something going on there that's important. And the fact that Lazar has led us into, this is the guy who told the world about Area 51. He is the guy. And he's the one who told us that Area 51 has a UFO connection, which of course the military and the national security apparatus has always denied, but there's a UFO connection. I think we can all say that. At least I would say that. But Lazar gave us Area 51. And according to Knapp, gave us information that Knapp has had corroborated from many other people. So
yeah,
there's problems, but there's things to accept as well. That's the thing.
Let's change the spirit of this conversation a little bit. Let's go off of the fact-based element of this and go here. Some of the possibilities that may have played out, and Richard, I would love your response, and also Christina. Let's paint this picture for a second. Is it possible that Bob got a job, set foot, flew out, Janet Airlines, EG&G, sets foot at Area 51, walks the tarmac, leaves the plane, that actually happened. And then the rest of it got out of control for him. And he was put on a pedestal, and the next thing you know, he is not in control of his ego.
But here's the problem with that. But if you go to Lazar's statements in 1989 and 1990, they are very detailed.
Very. They're the best, Richard.
And totally consistent, by the way. He gave a lot of different interviews. And the thing that you notice is he'd always like stop at the limits of what he appeared to know. He was always consistent.
But what I am suggesting here is that you know, the nine alien craft, maybe he saw none, but he's around a group of people that want to hear this. And then the next thing you know, he's thrown into the limelight, mm-hmm. and he needs to answer questions about him being a physicist and his educational background. And then that gets away from him too.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, and
especially the education part.
Right. It just got away from him. That's all. Was he actually at Area 51? Yeah, I think that's a very strong possibility that he was actually there. And then he was at the right place at the right time, and it just got away from him. And maybe that's a reason for the silence, you know, for the last 20 years that followed that. I'm just putting this out there as a possibility. The things that the hard documents that surfaced, which I'm going to say there's three, maybe four. One, his ID badge. Two, his W-2. Three, the newspaper at Los Alamos with him on the cover. And four, the phone directory at Los Alamos that's got his name in it. Okay, so we have these four, you know, I would say documents. But the ID badge didn't turn out to be real, apparently, allegedly. And the W-2 had clerical errors in it. And so we can almost remove those, but the Los Alamos, and I agree with Richard, he was there. He was an employee at Los Alamos.
And the Los Alamos connection takes you to Edward Teller. It takes you to Edward Teller,
which is back to the newspaper, right? And all of this is corroborated and checks out.
There's an interview that someone ambushed Teller. I saw this years ago. It's got to be out probably on YouTube somewhere. It's almost hilarious to watch. Because Teller is asked about Lazar, and he starts getting really worked up. He says, I don't know him, or if I know him, I don't know him, I do know him, and he just storms out. So, I mean, you know, what Lazar had always said is he ran into Teller at Los Alamos because he built this souped-up car with a jet engine on it, which he did do. Kind of a cool thing to do. That's how Lazar is an out-of-the-box thinker. Like, that's one thing that's definitely true about him. And he makes the cover of the local Los Alamos newspaper, and he stated that he ran into Teller the day that that headline, that newspaper was out, and chatted with Teller, impressed Teller, who said, oh, well, young man, here's my phone number. If you need a job, give me a call. And then some years later, he is a bored, out of work guy working in a photo lab. He's 29 years old, thinking, what am I going to do with my life? And he makes the phone call and gets connected to this. That he actually never stated who he got connected to. He said he lost the paper, but there was a name and phone number that he was connected to, and that got him to EG&G and with the Navy contract somehow.
Well, Richard, my question is, how about his drawings of the power reactor and gravity amplifiers and his technical explanations of how they work? I mean, have any prominent physicists or scientists come forward to say that they make sense aside from the power source, that the gravity amplifier drive system seems to make sense in any way?
Excellent question. Yeah, I remember him. Lazar created a series of VHS videos years ago and made that description and talked about it, how the element 115 was powerful enough that it would actually be able to create a space-time envelope around the craft and kind of bend that in a sense and bend space, bend time. I mean, you know, when he came out with this, that was total crackpot physics. I don't know that anyone's really gone into it to try to investigate it. The biggest problem, it seems to me, is no one knows how to get a working element 115. So I don't know that anyone would be able to support what he has to say.
One of the things that he said in those videos, by the way, I still think are some of the most fascinating pieces of video. And I've always tried to I've seen him hundreds of times, literally, and he never messed up in those videos. I wanted not in a physics sense or scientific sense, but just in an aura sense. And he presented himself really well. But what he said in those videos, Richard, was that, and nobody ever really brought this up before. It's not Arthur C. Clarke or Gene Roddenberry stuff. It was another idea where he said that the gravity was removed from the direction that you were going in, so you were always falling. You would fall in that direction, right? And that's how amazing is that? Yeah. Where does this come from? You know, it's almost like an off world, because we don't think like that here. And where does this idea come from, unless it's based on something? And I was always very impressed.
Yeah, I agree with you. I couldn't remember the details of that, but I remember the falling phrase. That's right. Yeah, Lazar, you know, he was on to certain things seemingly ahead of his time. And again, I would just point out, how did he just, was it a lucky guess that he knew about the Wednesday night test flights, where they were able to get video, you know, brought people out there? He was the first one to know about these things. So there's things that Lazar obviously figured out, and you can't just figure some of these things out by chance, it seems to me. So there's something there, and there are enough people rabidly supporting him who've known him, that I've just personally never been comfortable with tearing his story down. I know that Eric Davis just thinks Lazar is full of BS now, but I will just say, years ago, um, Yeah, I'll just say years ago, I wrote to Putoff about Hal Putoff and said, what do you think about Lazar? And Putoff never said, oh, yes, well, I know he absolutely went to S4. But he did say that my sources say that he was there. Not, I don't know what he did, but that he was there.
Now, Richard, and I jumped in front of Christina again because I know she had a question.
I do, but go ahead.
Is this, Richard, you've gone to multiple colleges, you've got your degrees, you know how difficult it is to attend a school, let alone multiple schools, and to get those diplomas. It's one thing to scrub somebody's education history at multiple schools. I suppose if it needed to get done, the government could pull that off, I guess. I think it would be difficult. But what they can't do is erase your friends and the people that you went to school with and your acquaintances and photographs that they took of you in common areas at the food court. You know, with all of the school that you have attended, how much stuff are you sitting on from college?
Actually, well, I have my diploma, my degrees.
Do you have photographs of you and friends?
They're falling to pieces. Like I actually don't know where my degrees are. They're around somewhere, but I've got them. Yeah, there's photographs that I have. I don't have a lot. I mean, and Lazar is a little older than we are. So I went to school. I was an undergraduate from 1980 to 1984. And I do have photographs from that time. Just thinking, yeah, I could pull it up. Like I could, well, I don't know if they're identifiable from my university. I've got dorm room pictures, you know, goofy college pictures that probably everyone takes. The 1980s and 1970s were a different time than today. It's like not, you didn't just take pictures all the time.
That's right.
In fact, you rarely took pictures. I when I went to Oxford in 1983, do you know that I almost took no pictures? I almost took none. The pictures I have are total crap. I've got a couple. And I had this attitude. I don't need to take pictures. I'm just going to experience it. I really wish I'd taken more pictures. It would be nice, but I didn't do it. And not everyone back in those days was fixated on taking pictures. I don't know about Lazar. He was working at a photo lab later, but I don't know what he was like in the 70s. I have no idea. But as far as friends, it's not impossible to pressure friends, actually. I mean, you say that it is, but I don't think it's impossible. But I tend to agree with you, Jimmy, that he probably didn't go to those schools. Like the impression that I got, you know, listening to, there was a lecture Lazar gave at the International UFO Congress in, I think it was 2011. I was there. And God, I wish I had a copy of that lecture. It's probably available. But I think he was auditing those classes. I think, isn't that what he said? He was auditing classes at MIT or Caltech. He wasn't really going for degrees. Like he was just sitting in.
Yeah, and there were
I thought he had a friend who went there.
Exactly. Hmm? There were some rumors saying that he was just joining a friend in some of his classes. But I have a question for the both of you. And it's so some UFO sightings seem to demonstrate visual field effects and some actions, or should I say kind of like aerial flight dynamics of especially the recent Navy pilot UAP videos, these crafts seem to be operating in an independent energy field. And I kept drawing parallels to these things Bob Lazar claimed when going over his information. So what do you both think of this as a certain kind of validation of his claims? Do you think that's possible?
Richard?
I don't know. I mean, my science is just not that great. You know, I mean, there it's not surprising to me that there would be people who would attempt to validate or whose studies would validate some of the things that Lazar said. But I actually don't know what those studies are, Christina. So it's hard for me to make a comment on it.
Jimmy?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. If we look at it in today's, if we frame it with today's knowledge, what always impressed me about Bob was the subjects that he was talking about 35 years ago. You know, we're in 2021. This is a long time ago. And these concepts, these ideas, were very, very forward thinking.
The whole idea of bending space and time, which he was talking about, like, I think in 1990, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
When did Alcubierre's equations come out? They were later. Miguel Alcubierre did his
early 2000s, late 1990s, early 2000s.
It was in the 90s. Yeah. It was after Lazar, though. So yeah. Alcubierre comes up with his math that essentially can, in a weird way, validate the concept of warp drive, even if we didn't have the energy to do it.
Right.
But Lazar's before that. So it's very advanced. It's
now, this is the thing. I said this last week on the show. Richard, I would love for Bob to sit down with a physicist of any kind, theoretical, astro, I don't care, doesn't matter, and write some equations together. Write this stuff out. Do you understand what's going on? Could Bob run some algorithms? Can he speak to another accredited physicist, and where a physicist would back up and go, he knows.
I'm going to take a wild guess here. This is, I started to say this and I didn't finish this thought. So Lazar was at, excuse me, at S4, I think 6 or 7 times. And I don't know if it was 6 or 7. I'm not sure if anyone really does, but I know the first two, he stated he didn't see any craft. He was just in a briefing room reading documents. So then that means he had, 4 or maybe 5 actual physical visits where he saw a craft. And you really have to wonder, like, how much work are you really going to be able to get done? How much math are you really going to do? How much are you actually going to learn that's detailed technical knowledge? And how much are you just hearing from other people who are working there? I'm going to guess a lot of the latter. Like, I don't care how smart you are. He's coming in off the street. He's being brought in. That's another thing that people have complaints about, right? That's like, how did this guy get this posting? He's basically a nobody. But he's an interesting guy with a very smart, creative mind. And maybe you could conceive, maybe this is why. Who knows? There are different theories why. There is the other one theory, as I recall, is that there was basically restaffing, like the old guard was gone. They were bringing in new people. And Bob was one of those new people. But my point is simply, I would be very surprised if he had an opportunity to do much serious math on any of this stuff. But, I mean, he blew the deal just, you know, in April.
Wednesday night. Yeah.
In April, I think it was April 5th, 1989, and he's done.
Right.
So he didn't really have much of an opportunity to learn a whole lot, seems to me.
No, but what I'm saying is, if you've gone and taken classes, he had always presented himself as a physicist, as a theoretical physicist that with advanced degrees from Caltech and MIT. This is what came out of his mouth. This wasn't put into his mouth. And if you've attended and taken those classes and studied, you know math. You know algorithms, and you know how theoretical physics is written and understood.
What he was a smart guy who might have taken some physics classes.
Well, let's stay on that, and let's imagine that back then when he was in school, that there was a very deep and concerted effort to discredit him, you know, wiping his records, skewing his credentials and academic qualifications. Mm-hmm. If that actually occurred, do you think it was successful based on all the arguments currently against his credibility? I mean, do you feel like he went quiet for so many years just because he felt like he had an uphill battle to convince other people about his credentials?
Well, yeah, think about the whole pandering charges that were levied against him in the early 90s. So he, you know, he's in Nevada, he's in the Vegas area, and prostitution is legal there. And he did some kind of security work or camera work, I think, or something for a brothel, right? Wasn't that it?
Yeah, I think he installed a security system.
Yeah. I mean, it was legit. Like, but he gets brought in. Like, there is a major attack that was against him where they were going after him. I cannot remember the details of this charge. Maybe one of you can.
I think pandering was the word, though. And
that was the word they used.
Right. Right, right. He was Pimp Daddy Lazar. That's what they tried to.
Yeah, but it was obviously a smear. I mean, it was clearly a smear campaign.
Yeah.
So you could see this guy is thinking, oh, crap. Like, and he knew why, because it was all with the UFO connection. None of that would have been a big thing if he hadn't been connected with UFOs previously. So he's obviously someone who thought, I stepped into a big pile of doo-doo, and I think I'm just going to stay away from this community, because, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to speak for the community in the early 90s anyway. He wasn't like a UFO researcher. He didn't really care previously about UFOs anyway. He gets brought in. He gets smacked around by the media. Everyone's trashing him. Why would he want to stay in? It's not like you're making all this much money in it. And it's what was it doing for him? It seemed like it wasn't doing anything for him, really.
It seems like it. But then there are some claims saying that he did make a lot of money selling merch, selling movie rights, books, things of that nature. What do you have to say about that?
I don't know how much money he made. I mean, it could be that, you know, even if you don't make a lot of money, maybe you see the dollar signs in your eyes and you're like, let me do this. So people will, it's true, like people will try to segue their 15 minutes of fame into money. Maybe that's the case with Lazar. I don't know. I'm not here to say, oh, absolutely, I'm 100% convinced Bob Lazar is truthful in every way. I'm not. But I don't like the idea of completely tearing his story apart. I think, I don't know, there's something about it that strikes me as legit, always has, and it still does.
Do you think, as I do, that for United Nuclear to be allowed to continue with its government
company
contracts, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That if the government had issues with him, I don't think that he would be awarded government contracts with pretty sensitive chemicals and just the name of the company, right? Yeah.
You think that, but I don't know. I don't know if that's accurate or not, Jimmy.
Well,
what if his company provides a genuinely good service that
someone wants it,
so they're using him?
That's what I'm saying. It's exactly what I'm saying. If they had issues with him, I don't think he would be awarded government contracts.
Oh, I see. I misunderstood you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I've always thought that it was one of the things that helped support his claims, because he was allowed to continue and probably some very sensitive areas of technology.
There is an argument you can make against Lazar for that, though. And this is what I thought you were going to go with. So let's say, like, we assume his story is true. And what does he do? He goes and spills the beans. So he talks about it. You could argue that a government agency would, like, that bastard, he ratted this whole classified operation out. We'll never hire him for anything. Like, there could be that response as well, which that's what I thought you were going to go to. So, I mean, you could really interpret that either way, it seems to me.
Yeah,
the fact that they have no problem with him could mean, yeah, it was all make-believe and it had no effect on national security. Like, that could also be the argument.
That could be. And if you continue down that path, another way to look at it is, if they would have come down on Bob outside of pandering charges, right? But if they would have come down on Bob, breaking of a security oath, a threat to national security, you know, it's paramount to giving away the secrets of the nuclear bomb. And if they came down on him like they could have, then that means his story is true.
Maybe. So
they would have to, they couldn't use him as a martyr, right?
They wouldn't want to go. I mean, my thinking is, and I could be wrong, because when he was subject to the whole pandering charade in the early 90s, they didn't go after him for the national security stuff, which you would think they could have. But if they did do that, that also obviously would have validated even more his claims. So the thing is, like, just as soon drop it, let it go, let it die. So there's different ways of looking at that.
Yeah, let him go run as United Nuclear, right? Let him go, and let's let this whole thing die down.
And while we're in the conversation about the claims. And I want to go back to the actual claims themselves. You know, the documents he allegedly read about how some of these crafts that he said to be, that he saw in hangars were actually recovered and some were damaged. How much of that information he came out with was original back at that time, as opposed to what was written in the Majestic 12 papers, which couldn't be validated either. So which had similar information. How do you have any opinions on that? Yeah. I mean, what I'm trying to do here is get back to the meats of his claims and what other similar claims and information was around at that same time, even if controversial. What are your thoughts on that?
I'll start. As far as with the MJ-12 document, so Lazar comes out with his story in 1989. So at that time, the MJ-12 documents had only come out the previous summer. Summer of 1988. That's the first time, or was it 87? 87, 88, around that time. I think Tim Good, anyway, around that time. Wish I could
remember. Are we talking about the Shandera?
Yeah. So Moore and Shandera got them in 84, but no one knew about it. I think it was a press conference in 87. So
yeah, I think that's so too. That sounds right.
So they were newly out, but if you read those documents, they say nothing. I mean, they say there was a crash at Roswell. They don't talk about, there's nothing about Area 51 in there. There's nothing about S4. There's nothing about reverse engineering or anything like that. And there's certainly nothing about 8 or 9 craft being stored anywhere. So all of that with Lazar, as far as I can tell, is new. But we do know that, I was mentioning James Goodall, who is getting stories, according to him, according to Goodall, in the mid-80s, so that's earlier than Lazar. But I am not of the opinion. I don't think Goodall was publicizing those stories at the time. As far as I know, he was keeping them to himself. But the point is that there clearly was a lot of quiet talk going on around Dreamland, which, you know, was a nickname for Area 51. So there were, in the local area, around in Nevada, around Las Vegas, there were clearly discreet circles of people who were talking about these things. So you could hypothesize Lazar ran into one of these circles and just glommed off of one of their stories. But I've never heard of any evidence that points to that, frankly. And we're not 100% certain that he even worked at S4, but I think he did. So I think his stories, in a lot of ways, he was first with a lot of this. Jimmy, do you want to comment on that?
Well, there was, if we look at Bob's purported, excuse me, ID badge, it does say Madge, M-A-J, as part of whether it's his employee number or access point, which would possibly, I mean, back then, Richard, he had Bill Cooper sort of venturing into this zone. He definitely had Bill Moore going into the Magic Majestic MJ zone. And how much would Bob have known about that then? John Lear, yeah, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Lear and Cooper were deep into this in 1988.
In 1988. And yeah, what was the Paranet?
Paranet started, that's the beginning of UFOs on the internet, everyone. Yeah. It was no graphic anything. It was just clunky old bulletin boards, black screen with white letters. That started 1984.
84 and Magic. And
so there was a UFO community that was, you know, talking about this.
That's right. That's right. So would Bob have been known about this? He could conceivably have. Yeah, possibly. Christina, that's just a great question. That's really well.
What's interesting to ask though is, you know, what was being discussed in summer of 88 going into the late 1988, early 89, because that's when Lazar would have been able to put the story together. And there were things that were out there, but basically it was Lear and Cooper who were doing, and a guy named Bill English, I think, was writing at that time.
Yep.
So there was a deepening of the conspiracy aspects of the UFOs.
Yeah.
Go on.
But at that same time, and the timing of all of this, going back to Christina's question, Jamie Shandera, Bill Moore, William Moore, and Stanton Friedman made those announcements about the MJ-12 documents by then. How much would Bob have had access to? I don't know. I know that chat was pretty heavy on Paranet back then, and it was big a bomb show. Yeah. Yeah, it was big a big time. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, that Cooper was referred to Lazar quite a lot. Once Lazar became a name, like everyone was talking about Lazar, I'm pretty sure Cooper was writing to Lazar, at least according to Cooper.
And then
that would not have anything to do with Lazar's story itself, because he would have talked about all of this before.
Yeah, there was nothing in the MJ-12 documents, though, Christina, about Element 115, gravity drives, that kind of stuff. The discussion about possible propulsion systems was all over the MJ-12 documents and the FBI memos that were going back and forth. And you certainly had different nuclear physicists and people that were in and involved around not only Los Alamos and White Sands, Trinity, the bomb, and the nuclear side of things and technology. That was in there. But the way that Bob approached it and all of that, no, that was not even anywhere near the MJ-12 documents.
I'm going to need to go in a minute, but I will just, I would like to say this one thing here, which, I mean, the late 1980s was the period in which ufology really exploded. I mean, we're going through an interesting period now, but I think in the late 1980s, it was insane. It really was because of the birth of the internet, like the baby internet. But even that baby internet was enough to just rock our world, because you think about the world before that. The world UFO research before that was basically dominated by a few people who published books, no self-publishing back then, and like the MUFON Journal, which had a circulation of less than 2,000. Can you imagine?
No, not really.
It's just like no one was reading this stuff. And then there was the IUR, the International UFO Reporter, which even fewer people were reading. Like it was just like a dead community compared with what we have, and which meant if you had interesting ideas, how are you going to get them published? You'd submit them to MUFON, which had their own editorial policies and their own little old boy network, and good luck with that. So then comes the internet, and suddenly anyone with a keyboard and a modem could like type up and put things out there. And that dominant, and suddenly you get this explosion of claims and conspiratorial claims. Now, the question that we can ask, and it all came out at once, Cooper, Lear, and Lazar's part of this, Bill English, a lot of people forgot about him, but he was very interesting at the time. And there were many others. The question is, were they all just making this stuff up for kicks? Mm-hmm. Or was the previous clampdown of information the very thing that was stopping the deeper aspects of this conspiracy from coming out? And then once you have this opportunity of information to come out, it all starts coming out. That's the question to ask. I don't personally believe. First of all, I don't believe a lot of things that Bill Cooper said. I think he had this capacity of believing his own pathological lies. That's another conversation. Not that everything he said was a lie, but I think he's someone who fell in love with fame, I think, without a doubt. But there's so much that was coming out at this time. I personally don't think it was all nonsense. I think that there's fire there.
And Richard, Richard, right before you leave, I just have one more question for you. And that is, what do you think, regardless if you believe Bob Lazar or not, what do you think he brought to the UFO community?
Well, he brought us Area 51 and S4. He brought us the sports model UFO discussion. He got, you know, he's, well, there's two answers to that, because if he's truthful, he brought us I think, a tremendous amount of further corroboration, particularly through George Knapp. I would really love for George to go a lot deeper on the sum total of what his witnesses have told him. He's talked about it in various conferences. I don't know if he's published anything. But if Lazar is full of beans, then he brought us a whole lot of distraction, didn't he?
Yeah.
And a lot of waste of time. I'm hoping that's not the case. I don't think that's the case. But the thing is, this is one, you know, back to Stan Friedman, who hated or at least didn't believe Lazar. But Stan always had a concept that I've found extremely useful. The concept is the gray basket. Stan was someone, even though he didn't believe Lazar and he didn't believe a lot of things, I think he had a good capacity for withholding final judgment on things, being comfortable with uncertainty, which is a great Zen Buddhist book, by the way, Comfortable with Uncertainty. But it's a good concept to live by. Because, I mean, we're in a field that's, A, it's over our head. A lot of this is just over our head, I think. We're dealing with an intelligence that we're just not equipped. I just don't think we're fully equipped to dealing with it. Plus, then we've got the secrecy aspects of it. We have a government that habitually, congenitally lies to us about everything, and they definitely lie about UFOs. It's a secret that, in my view, and I've said this time and again, most recently with Jimmy talking about Davis Wilson, but I think it's been privatized to such an extent that government agencies are just incapable, almost incapable of getting anything out on this. So we've created this labyrinth of lies. And so we're in a position where this is a really, really tough subject for us to get hold of. But I think Lazar is one of the people that we have to keep an eye on, because I think I tend to believe his story to this day.
I said to Stanton, I was on a phone call with him. I said, "So Stanton, is the door completely closed for you with Bob Lazar, or is there a crack? Is there a crack
that
you can see through?" And Stanton, love that guy. "Well, you know, when we could. The door is always cracked. You know, I'm not one to, you know," and I said, "Stanton, are you saying with the possibility?" You know, and I think he was okay with that. I think Stanton realizes that his work in science and physics, and you know, he's a nuclear physicist, is nothing but a series of corrections. That's what science is, right? And you are constantly wrong because you were proven wrong, and then you move forward. And that's how science advances, right?
That's the gray basket. That's why it's such a great
concept. Right.
And he was okay with that. So not to say that the door swung open, but, you know, I think I can see through the cracks sometimes. Okay. All right.
Yeah, Richard, thank you so much for coming on today and spending extra time with us. It's been fantastic. And for my younger viewers who have requested it, I will be inviting Mr. Richard Dolan to be joining me on Shifting the Paradigm in the near future to cover his books and ongoing research. So again, thank you so much, Richard, and good luck today.
Thank you so much, Christina. It was a pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, Richard, what's your show about tonight?
I'm not sure if I'm going to do a show. I'm working on my taxes.
I have to do that,
working
too.
Working on the taxes. I've got a couple of days to wrap this up.
Yeah, I've been doing that for 2 days with my account.
So, I mean, I don't think I'm going to do a show after. I was planning to, but I'm in the midst of a mountain of
this right here, what we're doing right now, 5 minutes before showtime. I got Christine and Dolan. I got to go. So
I just did a thing for my website on more on totalitarianism as it is encroaching around us in the world. It's not a UFO thing, but I'll probably do something on YouTube about that soon.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, we are going to be right back after this short break.
I'm Micah Hanks, and let me tell you something. I support Christina Gomez as a Patreon subscriber, and here's why you should too. She brings all of her unique insights to a whole new generation, and all while she's also going through college. Listen, support Christina, become a Patreon subscriber today. You won't regret it.
That was so awesome to hear both you and Richard talk about this Bob Lazar case, because you guys are on different sides of the fence. And I think having that in any kind of conversation is very helpful for everyone that is watching as well.
You know, it is okay to not agree. It's okay to not agree. It's fine. And Richard and I, we were at a conference earlier this year, and I like to gather people and influence them with copious amounts of alcohol. Right. And that's what I like to do. No, yeah. No. I know. You've never heard this. Never heard this before. It's a revelation. But so one night, Richard and I, we've got about 20 people, you know. Richard and I are in the middle of the group, and I've got, you know, servers coming in with trays of shots, and we're just goofing off, getting loud and having a good time. And Richard spins around loudly in front of everybody there. Okay, let's get this thing going, church. I said, all right, what's up? And he goes, give me your best about Bob Lazar. And he just shouts it out. And that's, you know, and here we are, and everybody kind of leans in, but that's okay. And Richard is saying, and so am I in front of everybody there, look, we don't agree on this, but we're going to talk through this. And we got everybody involved in the conversation, and they sat and listened to Richard, where we are, I think we're on opposite sides of the fence, but we are okay with changing our minds. We are okay if something is there to do. Because look, I changed my mind on Bob, right? And so what made me do that? That doesn't mean I can't go the other way and get swung back. That is what learning is all about, Christina. And Richard and I practice that. So if we can demonstrate civility in a conversation that clearly we don't agree on, so can everybody else. All right. And it's really the best way to go.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And when it comes to any conversation, I think the reason to why you talk to someone else is to hear their views and their opinion so that it can morph yours or give you a different perspective on any kind of story so that you're able to get a larger version of the story or of the truth, depending on what you're talking about. So regardless, for any kind of topic that you're talking with someone else and you disagree with them, I think at the end of every conversation, you should really just tell them thank you. Because if you talk to someone who had the exact same ideas as you, the exact same mindset as you, that's so boring. Like, who wants to do that all day? It's like eating bread every single day for all of your meals for like 10 years. At right. some point, you're going to get so tired of it. You want to have that variety. Even if you might not like it at the first bite, maybe you'll add jam to your bread and you're like, wow, this tastes really peculiar. After a few bites, you're like, you know what? You could get used to this. It's really not that bad.
Yeah, kind of like pineapple on pizza.
That's amazing.
It didn't used to be for me. But this is, if I'm at a party.
Like you were this Saturday.
And I'm sitting down and I just meet somebody and we're talking. Let's just say somebody says that they're an experiencer, or they were abducted by ET, or that they were in an underground facility, or they just saw Bigfoot walk through their campsite, whatever it is. I don't have to believe them, but I'm certainly going to go, what happened? You saw a ghost. Okay, well, tell me about it. And the ability to just stop and listen to somebody, that's golden. That is something that we've lost sight of, the ability to listen. But that's what's great about Fade to Black. That's what's great about sitting down with you week after week, where we can discuss these things. But I am able to bring anybody on Fade to Black. It doesn't matter. I'm going to have a conversation. Let's figure this out. Bob Lazar is one of those guys where Billy Meyer's another example. I almost went there with Richard. We didn't have enough time. But Billy Meyer's another example of that, where completely polarized out there in the world. And you can't say the right thing about Billy Meyer. You can't do it. You can't do it. It doesn't matter. Whatever you say about Billy, whatever it is, it happened. It didn't happen. The films are real. He hoaxed them. The ships were real. He built models. Whatever you say, whatever it is, you are the Antichrist and you're going to get attacked. And it's the same thing with Bob and other individuals and claims and stories and things out there. And you're always going to do that. And you should be able to talk freely about the stuff and get thoughts out, ask questions without everybody just getting completely upset. And there you go. All right. So enough of that. Let's go back to Bob.
Let's go back to Bob. What? And my question is, from your knowledge, has anyone come forward in these ensuing years anecdotally stating that they worked at S4, or has there been any form of confirmation that the installation even exists?
Okay. Yes. And you know, like Phil the Stalker just said in the chat room, why do I get angry when Jimmy's talking? Exactly. Why do I get angry when I see Phil the Stalker in the chat room? Why does that happen? See, this is
such a troll.
Oh man. Is this when I've done this a lot, and when the official satellite images started to pop up from Area 51, private satellite company up there, and they're taking pictures, and these things get released, and other areas around Area 51 and the nuclear test site that's out there. So I get that, and then Google Maps is out now, so we've got that. And I went back and analyzed.
Did you read the comment? Tina said, Jimmy, he said hungry, not angry.
See, I read what I want to read.
Selective reading.
Hold on. Let me back up. Hold on. Let me find Phil the Stalker. Did he say hungry? See, why do I get hungry? Oh, man. Anyway, so I went back and listened to and
Phil, I'm sorry.
All the are you going to post it now? Go ahead and post it.
No, I did. I already put it up.
Oh, you did?
But hunger does induce anger, so you know.
This is anger, and I went back and started to look for access roads and look for these facilities and, you know, these hangar doors. Now, they may be camouflaged, and I get that, and how he described it and everything. But you would see tire tracks. You would, they're driving buses to these facilities. He mentioned a guard shack and a fence that was surrounding it. I looked at every mountain, everything, all around Area 51, and I found evidence of nothing. Outside of Area 51, there's nothing there. And the other part about this, especially in the S4 area, go look at Papoose Lake, the dry lake bed. Go look for any evidence of a human being. There's so much radiation and stuff out there from the nuclear test. I just couldn't imagine anybody walking around out there to go from the bus through a gate and into this test facility. I couldn't find it. But Secure Team 10. Tyler Glockner. Okay. Now there's another polarizing individual right there. He just texted me earlier today saying belated happy birthday. But Tyler got a hold of, and I went and looked at it, and he popped up this video. He sent me the video before he launched it, wanted me to take a look at it, that he found evidence of hangar doors next to Area 51 about, you know, supporting Bob Lazar. Now, I went and looked at the video, and I saw the area. Then I immediately went to Google Earth, and sure enough, they were there. Now,
while we're on that,
Christina, I want everybody to understand what I'm saying. It wasn't, here's Area 51. This is backwards on the screen. Papoose Lake and S4 are in the southeast corner of Area 51, southeast, where he's talking about with this hangar door. Is here's Area 51, there's a mountain range, and then here's the nuclear test site. It was on that mountain, probably 30 miles to the west, northwest of Area 51. But under construction, for sure, weren't finished, but these were hangar doors on the side of a mountain, and you could see the road coming down, and you could see the construction equipment. And definitely building something massive in the side of this mountain that was meant to be secret. And now, does that prove S4? You know, here's Area 51. S4 is down here, right? This area is up here. It's not the same, right? But, you know, same location. But does this support Bob's story? Certainly helps it, for sure. It was pretty interesting. I should have Tyler send me the link to that particular video, and I'll pop it up there and get it happening.
Yeah, we would like to see it. And that kind of leads me to another question, or kind of like an area when it comes to Bob Lazar, and that's the two polygraph exams that he took. Are you aware with those exams? Okay, so it's
Can you send me the link to the hangar door video at Area 51 that you did up in the mountains. Send me that link. I want to check it out and post it. Thanks! Exclamation point. Okay, so I'm gonna get that. And
okay, awesome. Tina put one up in the chat, and she's asking if it's this one that looks familiar to you.
Let's see. Hang on, man. That's a lot of Oh, you have to, I can't click.
You should be able to highlight it in the chat on your side. Maybe you'll be able to copy and paste it.
Okay. Thank you for that, Christina. Copy and paste. Wow, I've never seen this before. It actually
works. What if I told you
works.
The secret to weight loss?
Okay. You didn't hear that. Did you hear that?
I heard that.
Okay. The secret to weight loss. The secret to weight loss. Okay, here we go. Area 51, this could be big. S4. Yes, this is the video. Well done, Tina.
Good job, Tina.
Well done. Yeah, everybody go watch this video. 712,000 views.
Wow.
And Tyler, yeah, this is it. This is it. Breaks it down. It's pretty crazy. And I'm hoping I got everything right with what I said. Okay, but that's the right video. I'm talking about the location. If I had the northeast, southwest.
It's hard to remember, especially when you're looking at the screen. Everything's backwards.
But watch the video. It's really good. It's really good.
I'll look at it when we end today. But I want to get back to the polygraph exams. So he took two exams by two different people. And both times he passed one exam and then failed another. So both of his polygraph exams were inconclusive.
Right.
What do you think about that? Does that make him believable? Does it make him not believable? Is he kind of like another Travis Walton where he passed some and failed others, but his story is still... He doesn't change the story.
All right. I wasn't there, but I, I've taken one polygraph test in my life, and it was for employment, right? So they send me to this place, and you know, you walk in, and the guy that's running this company, he's got pictures of him, you know, in battle fatigues and around the world. He's like a Marine or a SEAL team dude, and whatever, and it's all intimidating, right? I was like, okay. All right. So they bring me in and sit me down, and I, you know, they wire you up in your chest and your fingers and whatever. And I sit, I'm kind of freaking out, you know.
I would too.
I lied to every question that was asked. I had to. The stuff that they were asking me, right? And I lied. And I passed. And I got the job. Now, I mean, it was little questions, you know. Have you ever stolen anything? Nope. Right? I probably stole a candy bar in my life or whatever. You know, I mean, have I ever robbed a bank? They didn't ask me that. but you know, just questions. And I'm, you know, and Yep. I mean, every question that they asked, everyone, I lied. I had to. It was just like, it was bizarre. And I got to a point in this polygraph, Christina, where I was like, well, I've gone this far. I just, you know, whatever. And I couldn't believe it. The guy comes in, sits down, man, you're just one of the most truthful, honest people. Man, this is just, you know, welcome to the team. I was like, oh, good Lord. So when somebody says to me that they took a polygraph test and they passed, means nothing. If somebody tells me they took a polygraph and failed, means nothing. I just don't think they're accurate. And that's it. I'm being a little facetious about my polygraph experience. I didn't lie on every question, just most of them. But I thought I was caught, and I was watching those needles, right? Mm-hmm. It's right in front of me. I'm watching it go down. I'm like, well, yeah, they know I lied about that. You know, and it was just really funny. I passed that thing with flying colors. So anyway, I don't trust polygraphs, good or bad. It doesn't matter if you pass or fail. I don't think it's any fault of your own. I mean, if you fail it and you were being truthful and you failed, that's the machine's fault. That's not your fault. If you're telling the truth and you failed, you know what? You know what I mean? But there was one thing, man, this video, I'm watching it right here. This video is crazy town. This video is just insane. I wonder what everybody thinks about this. It's pretty cool.
Maybe we'll ask about it next week. But Jimmy, we're going to be wrapping this up pretty shortly. And let me ask you, what would it take for you to go back to the place you were at, where you were at with Bob for 30 years? What would you need to see in order to believe his story in present day?
You know what? He would just need to come clean on a couple of things. That's all. I don't need to see the evidence. He needs to come clean about MIT and Caltech. Just come out and go, I didn't go to those schools. I never had an advanced degree. I didn't do it. And you don't have to tell us why, you know, just come clean about that. And that would be enough for me. And I think the rest of the community, where we could just start to move on from this.
I guess my question would be, how would you know if he came clean? Like, do you already have the information in your pocket, or how would you able to verify it?
Well, no, there's nothing to verify. If he says he made it up, then that I think that would be a huge step in the right direction, so we know that he's being honest and moving forward. But I think that there are so many unstable things and I'm not talking about element 115, but there's so many unstable things. One, of course, is the educational background. B, how long did you really spend at Area 51, and what did you actually see? How much of it did you blow up, and you know, the story just got bigger and bigger and got away from you? But how much of it was real? What did you actually see at Area 51? What did you really see? I want to know. Did you see an advanced aircraft? Did you really see the Aurora? He talked about that. Mm-hmm. Did you see this? Did you see another advanced version of the SR, you know, 71, the SR 72, you know, SR 82? That to me is much more interesting. Yeah, the UFO stuff is cool, but what did you actually see at Area 51? I would want to know that. I really would. The tax documents, how you got paid, why were the mistakes made on the W-2? Yeah, that's pretty, you know, did you fake or did somebody else make your Area S-4 badge for you? Why did you feel the necessity of putting that forward if you were actually at the base? Why did you need to have this kind of evidence created? You know, was that W-2 a real W-2, or did you fake that to support your story? The story was real, right? But the documents around supporting this story are not. So why did you do it? Who did it? And let's talk more about actually what went on at S4 and Area 51. And I'd be cool with it. I would definitely be swayed in the right direction. I mean, honesty is everything. And I think all of us make mistakes. And when you do and you make a mistake and you stumble, talk about it, you know, get it out there. I made the mistake. And we are much better with that than you living a lie. You know, that's the uncool part. So just come clean. We all make mistakes. We all do. And we move forward and we learn from those. So that's my take.
Well, I think if we asked him if his honest answer, I think we would still be in the same loop that we would just be taking his word for it. Now, of course, if we did bring the evidence to back up his claims, such as the W-2s and all the other documentation, then yes, it can make it more honest sounding. But Until then, I guess it's still just a story, and there's still a great divide between those that believe Bob Lazar and those that don't. That is it for today's show. I want to say thank you for everyone in the live chat. Thank you for all the super stickers. I am sorry I had to disable super chat because we were on such a short time crunch with Mr. Doland. Make sure to hit the like button and to subscribe. Thank you to all my moderators that have been freaking fantastic. All the super stickers, the Patreon supporters. And Jimmy, who do you have on today on your show?
Tonight, Paul Hynek.
And for those who don't know who that is, who is he?
That is Dr. Hynek's son from Project Blue Book. And he's amazing. Okay, so I got Tyler here. Boom, 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 boom. Thanks, man. Comma, I got the link. I'm watching the video now! Exclamation point.
Rock on.
There you go. Paul Hynek tonight. Going to be incredible. And then tomorrow night is Isaac Arthur, the physicist. And the show was called The Physics of a Tic Tac.
Oh, that's going to be interesting.
So that's tomorrow night. Christina, thank you so much. I want to thank Richard for coming in. And last week after the show, when I mentioned I got him.
Jimmy, you made it happen.
Let's go, Jimmy. Let's go. I'm Christina's so cool. Love what she's doing. You know, so there you go. So I want to thank Richard for taking time out of his day. I've got a show tonight. I'll see everybody. Thank you, Christina. Everybody behave. Okay.
Peace out. Bye, Jimmy. And that is it for today's show. It went so well. It was very exciting. I read a comment that says, Curly Whirly, those are delicious. Delicious. Okay. But make sure to like, subscribe, and to share this video for those that are interested in this topic or for the guests that we had today. And remember to keep your eyes on the skies. We'll be right back.